You're listening to My Radio at StanPelke.com. Welcome back, and thanks for your patience during our production hiatus. This is Stan Pelke, your host for this 11th podcast, featuring the first half of Chapter 6 from my original novel, Project Earth, Dawn of Defiance. Please visit the rest of my website for additional December blogs and reviews, as well as an upcoming bonus Christmas music podcast. Chapter 6. The Temple of the Blood Fang God. Awandor had not slept well. It was unusually warm and humid, and Telkor Torin had insisted on keeping the heavy, carved wooden door of their stone slab house closed to the cooler nighttime breezes. She had been awake for some time when Telkor Torin began to toss and turn and mutter softly. 5 moons ago, Bright Sparrow had first noticed the beginning of a change in her husband, the Knife Priest. First, he had begun to be unusually tired during the mornings, and after many days of restless sleep, he became increasingly cross during the sun-drenched hours of the afternoons. His patience with his junior apprentices, who were no doubt sleeping soundly at that moment in the stone slab house beside theirs, eroded. He insisted that the senior apprentices do more and more of the stone crafting work for the village, while he focused solely on shaping arrowheads or practicing ancient songs while pacing alone along the edge of the forest. He had almost struck a young apprentice who had dared to approach him at the wood's edge one afternoon. That was the moment when Awandor knew she had to begin watching the Knife Priest carefully. As Telkor Torin's mood darkened even further, he became more distant with Awandor and began to touch her less and less. They had not made love for many moons. At first, Awandor wondered if Knife Priest had taken another woman, a secret wife whom he would introduce to the village at the new moon festival after the harvest. She had thought that it might have been First Fist's eldest and very attractive daughter. That would have been neither unexpected, given Knife Priest's ascent within the Magisterium, nor unusual. Most of the village's wealthier men took more than one wife. There were always more women than men in the village. It had always been that way, or so the ancient widows claimed. But then Bright Sparrow had realized that Telkor Torin was not sleeping well at night. When she sat up at night watching him, she saw the telltale signs that led her to her second conclusion. Telkor Torin, the Knife Priest, her husband, was possessed by the dreaming spirit. At first this gave her hope. It was whispered among the handful of families that had the foresight that such special possession often led to an outpouring of new sacred songs. Awandor's own father had told her that he had been possessed 3 times in his life. During 2 of those times, he had been given more songs than at any other time in his long life. But as the number of days of restless nights increased, and Awandor saw how dreary Telkor Torin's expression had become, and how his days were increasingly occupied with anxieties, she began to think that this was not, in fact, the soul of a man being touched by the gods. Indeed, Telkor Torin had begun to refuse to sing the sacred songs for the villagers, and was now sending his apprentices to sing over the newborns, the crops, and even the minor hunts. If this continued, his position within the village would collapse. One day, 2 moons ago, Awandor had finally taken him firmly by the hand and had said, "Tell me about the dream." Telkor Torin looked at her, surprise dancing on his brow and in his eyes. He had opened his mouth as if to speak, then snapped it shut and tried to pull away. She tightened her grip. "Tell me about the dream," she insisted. He shook his head. "Let go. I must see to the work being done by my apprentices. First, tell me about the dream." Knife Priest shook his head, leaned close, and whispered, I cannot. It was the closest their faces had been to each other in many weeks. He then straightened his back, pulled himself free with a sudden downward wrenching of his arm, and slipped through the open doorway of the other stone slab house that served as the workroom for Telkor Torin and his apprentices, and the sleeping quarters for the younger boys. A week later, Awandor created her strongest potion. She gathered ingredients from the woods and even crossed the footbridge to seek several rare plants growing like weeds among the rows of corn at the farthest edge of the village's fields, many miles away. She had prepared the potion carefully, lovingly, filling it with deep incantations. She would soothe his mind with this gift. "I will not drink that," he had said angrily. "It will help. No, you must have a night of sleep free of dark dreams." She leaned in close and whispered into his ear, "You will drive one or more of the apprentices away with your harsh words and actions. The people are beginning to say your work is not blessed as it was before planting season." Those words clearly troubled Telkor Torin. He had begun to reach for the potion she had crafted, but then he stopped himself. Looking intently into her eyes, he said simply, "It is not yet time for the gift of peaceful sleep. There is more I need to know." He walked away to his quiet spot down the path near the water, where he worked for several hours, chipping away at a large axe head that one of his apprentices had started. On this night, as the moon rose high above their house, Bright Sparrow pulled Telkor Torin to her on their bed and kissed him tenderly. He had responded as she had hoped, at least at first. But then he had rolled to his side and began to cry, great heaving sobs that shook his whole torso. Awandor wrapped her arms around his body and whispered gentle songs into his ear. After he had fallen asleep, she placed her hands on each side of his head and tried to peer into his mind. If the dreaming spirit was visiting her knife priest, then the god might open knife priest's thoughts to her. But from the very first moment she tried to read him, Awandor found his mind even more closed to her than usual. Awandor finally drew her hands from her husband's head and snuggled up close to him. She had nearly fallen asleep when she heard his voice begin to whisper, "At harvest time, they will come to steal the first fruits." Bright Sparrow sat up again and looked at his face. His eyes were shut and his breathing was regular. He was speaking to her from out of the dreaming. "Which first fruits?" she whispered into his ear. His right arm rose into the air and swept with a large, grand gesture this way and that above his chest. "The children," he said simply.
"The village children?"
The sleeping Telkor Torin nodded. "The time of the harvest is approaching.
Who will come for the children?"
"Strangers."
"From another village?"
"Strangers." His face suddenly twisted in pain, and Telkor Torin sat bolt upright. His eyes snapped open and his mouth twisted into a wild shout.
"I see men with painted faces," he yelled into the darkness. "They despise us, the people of the green fields. They will turn the dead upon us."
He wailed with a voice she had never heard come from his mouth before, then collapsed silently back onto his bed. Telkor Torin's eyes closed again, and he fell into a deep sleep. She stared at him for many minutes, whispering soft incantations to the secret woman, the hidden goddess of the ancient widows, known only to the womenfolk and completely unknown to the men of the village. Awandor needed the deepest magic now.
"Secret woman, what must I do if the dead are to walk among us?"
Bright Sparrow's heart stirred, and she turned her attention to the stars above, faintly visible through the smoke hole. They seemed to begin to spin. Out of the swirling mass, she saw three men dressed in black, and one had the face of her knife priest. She saw herself leading these men up a steep hill. As they crested its top, they looked down onto a wide expanse, a plain so vast and filled with so much corn and wheat that she cried out with a start from within the seeing, and she saw herself point toward the center of the plain, toward a strange, shimmering hill.
"Be vigilant,"
a voice whispered to her from the swirling stars.
"Take the path of the Blood Fang God."
Awandor woke the next morning before the sun lifted itself above the horizon. Bright Sparrow rose from their bed and pulled a heavy robe around her shoulders, then slipped out into the crisp morning air. Telcor Torin was still sleeping soundly in their bed, and his apprentices had not yet woken to go down to the river to fetch the morning water. Turning this way and that to make certain no one saw her, Bright Sparrow then hurried up the path to the footbridge and crossed the river. Several finches twittered past her, and four waterfowl rose from the far bank and sputtered at her for disturbing their morning feeding as she reached the far end of the bridge. She could hear the seven or eight young boys who guarded the fields at night, some way off to her left, encamped among the rows of corn. They were laughing as they prepared an early morning meal of what smelled like freshly caught fish. She turned the opposite way and began to push her way through the field. The morning air was fresh after the humid night. Insects were beginning to buzz across the field, and the ground was still wet with dew. Awandor pushed through row after row of corn, walking south for many minutes. The sun had finally risen fully above the hills to her left and was bathing the forest and the fields with its first warm light. On and on she pressed until the cornfields were behind her and the river bent sharply and curved across the plain before her. There, about a quarter of a mile further south, along the bank of the river, stood the Elder Home. It was a simple compound with one large longhouse made of rough-hewn logs and three smaller turf-mound huts. Small vegetable gardens surrounded the house and the huts, and the whole compound was nestled inside a palisade of spiked branches, except along the back of the compound, which ran up to the river's edge. This was where the ancient widows and their handful of devotees lived, and it was where Awandor had spent much of her childhood, as her mother had before her. Several women and one man were already working in the garden as she approached the closed gate. When the man saw her, he whistled three times before hurrying up with a wordless gesture, directing her to stand fast. They looked at each other over the chest-high gate until Awandor finally said, "I was a child of this house, and I have come to seek the wisdom of the Prime Widow." The man said nothing in reply, but studied her face intently. Then he nodded once and began to open the gate. The two women, perhaps only 7 or 8 summers older than Awandor, watched her curiously as she approached the door to the longhouse. As she reached the very threshold, Awandor hesitated for a moment and looked back the way she had come. The mute man was already closing the gate. There was nothing to do now but to go forward. She turned her face back to the doorway and shuffled into the longhouse. The longhouse was spacious but sparsely furnished, and, as always, it was rather smoky both from the incense that was constantly burned and from the large fire in the pit at the center of the room, which was surrounded by a raised surface on which the sacred dances took place. At one end of the house were a series of cots. Some were still occupied by a few young girls who were among the current charges of the ancient widows. At the other end were tables and chairs for meals, as well as piles of animal skins, which were slowly being turned into garments for the villagers by several women. They worked in absolute silence while two small girls cooked the morning meal. There were no men in the longhouse. They only entered when they were needed to play music. They ate and slept in the three turf huts. An elderly woman approached Awandor.
"The Bright Sparrow. She has flown back to the nest," the woman said, but not kindly. "It has been many years since we have seen you here."
Awandor knew this woman well. Ez Telnira had been Awandor's first songstress. Old even then, she had been a bitter mistress, angry about her lot in life, and never satisfied with Awandor's work or the work of any of the other girls, or of the women, for that matter. Bright Sparrow still bore a scar on her back where Ez Telnira had struck her with a blunt knife to punish her for some infraction.
"Mistress," she replied softly with a gesture of deference. "Too busy tending the village idols to return to the Fount of Wisdom," Ez Telnira clucked. "Oh, we have heard of all that has happened to you since your days with us. How you have married a knife priest and taken one of the old homes. Tell me, do you remember the songs I taught you?
or is your voice slave now to the owl matron alone? I remember the songs, mistress. They give me strength.
She sneered.
Strength is a man's word. I tried to teach you truth. Leave her, Eztelnira.
From out of the shadows came a bent form, wizened, old beyond imagining. The prime widow shuffled toward them, blind, leaning on a great wooden staff. Bright Sparrow fell to her knees before the old woman and gently kissed the tops of her bare feet.
Bright Sparrow,
the prime widow said, drawing her back to her feet and then touching her face and hair and ears.
Bright Sparrow, the girl is gone and the woman has emerged. But as I recall, on the day you left us, you swore you would never return here, just as your mother swore when she left us to marry your father.
And she met with quite an end,
as Telnira cackled.
Hush, sister.
Awendor lifted her hands in ritual supplication.
I was foolish then, mistress. I was hasty with words in my youth. I did not practice as I should have. I dreamed of a life within the village with a man as mother to his children. But I have learned some wisdom since, and I have not forgotten the wisdom you taught me, mother. Though I love my knife priest with all my heart, I wish I had left you with more grace. But I have learned such grace, if only too late.
Lies! Where has this grace been these past few years, or this self-proclaimed maturity? Lies, I say. If she has finally returned, then her need must be very great indeed. Once more she takes and takes with no thought of giving.
Enough, Eztelnira.
The old woman's voice was surprisingly loud and clear.
For the sake of the child who is filled with so much promise, I will listen to what she asks.
Thank you, mother. Awendor swallowed hard and took a deep breath. She was surprised by the biting tone of the women's response to her presence, though she knew it was well deserved. For the sake of Knife Priest, however, she would play her part. Last night, she began to say softly, the secret woman spoke to me.
Eztelnira scoffed,
but the prime widow lifted her hand to silence the other woman.
She did, Awendor insisted. She did. She passed down from the stars and spoke at a moment of deepest need.
And what was her message?
Take the path of the Bloodfang God, Awendor repeated softly.
Several of the other women in the longhouse stirred at this.
She lies. Once more she lies to your face, prime widow,
Eztelnira spat.
She claims maturity and grace, but has shown neither these past 3 years. All her lips can do is tell lies. The secret woman would not commune with one such as this,
Eztelnira sneered.
Send her back to the people beside the trees. Let her find wisdom among that kind.
Eztelnira, the people beside the trees are our people. The women of the village are our sisters, even if they do not share our devotion. You would do well to show more mercy yourself.
The prime widow reached up and touched Awendor's face again.
Besides, I sense no signs of deception.
I do not lie, mother. I would never lie about this, nor to you.
Leave us,
the prime widow suddenly ordered. The handful of women who had been working put down their sewing and then ushered all of the girls from the longhouse, even those who had still been sound asleep moments before. But as Eztelnira prepared to depart, the prime widow grabbed her arm.
You will stay as witness to truth, sister.
When the space was empty except for the three women, the prime widow continued.
As you know from your earliest days with us, there is a secret history of the people of the Greenfields, a secret history that differs from the stories told by the men in their magisterium. One whispered only among the womenfolk through our own songs. But even the womenfolk do not know the whole story. There are 5 great commands that are known only to myself and the senior sisters. They are passed down in deepest secrecy, and no one outside the elder home may know them. And now you speak one of those commands.
My husband, the knife priest, I had thought he was under the spell of the dreaming spirit, but his soul is troubled and his way unclear. There is something else that speaks to him, and he will not tell me who it is or what messages it speaks. Last night in the dark hours, I tried to see into his dreaming, but the way was closed to me, and then he uttered words, terrible words, of a harvesting of the children. After that, the secret woman visited me and gave me that command. Awendor expected Eztelnira to say something cutting once more, but her old songstress was oddly quiet.
The songs tell of a harvest of the young, but it happens so rarely,
the Prime Widow whispered.
Not once in my lifetime. Yet the secret commands, yield not the children,
as Telnira finally croaked.
She has been blessed by the secret woman. Sister, have your doubts retreated?
The Prime Widow asked, turning her cold, dead eyes toward Eztelnira.
The Bright Sparrow deeply disappointed me, but I never doubted her gifts. I even hoped that one day she would return to us. I cannot doubt these words that have been spoken.
The Prime Widow looked back toward Awandor.
My mind is also settled. A command has been given, and given to you. Whether it is the secret woman herself who tried to speak to and through your man, I do not know. Perhaps some Dark Lord troubles his mind for his own wicked reasons. But for a moment, at least, your knife priest saw truly. Something is coming. Something is coming that has not come for many lives, and it will destroy us.
She reached for Awandor's arms and pulled her close.
Listen, daughter, and listen well. I must teach you the secret history quickly, without song. You must be ready for what comes next.
I will learn, mother.
Few now remember,
the old woman began,
and the old songs are almost forgotten, though your own father knew some and taught three to me that even I did not learn from my songstress. Your father and I would sit down by the water so that no one else would hear him share them with me.
She chuckled softly.
How that filled your mother with envy and even more hatred for us. But your father knew such stories belonged only among we few.
She stopped for a moment to gather her thoughts.
When I was a little girl, the ancient widows sang of the people of the Stone Ways, rulers of the valleys of the mountains far and wide. At the center of their terrible kingdom, in a great stone fortress to the west of here, they worshipped the Bloodfang god. The people of the Stoneways made war upon the people of the Greenfields and forced our ancient mothers and fathers to worship the Old One as well.
The old woman reached for Awandor's head and turned it so she could whisper into her left ear.
And the secret song said he demanded human sacrifice.
Then she let go and leaned back.
In time, the people of the Greenfields fought back against the people of the Stoneways, but they were too weak. The lords of the Stoneways became drunk on victory and power, and on the suffering of the people of the plain, and sometimes they would sacrifice entire villages on their great altars in their mountain fortress. The people of the Greenfields came to live in terror, but the Owl Matron and the Secret Woman called a council of wise women. They decided action had to be taken before all of their children were destroyed. They visited a young hunter from among the forest nomads and sent him on a journey into the green fields. He met and fell in love with a princess from our village. There are many songs of this one's adventures as he struggled against the Stoneway lords. In time, he learned those wicked lords planned to sacrifice his beloved's people, that they planned to harvest the village for the Bloodfang god, as they had harvested many other villages in the plains. That night, the hunter used the magic of the Owl Matron and gathered guardian wolves from the forests he knew so well and made them watch the paths from the mountain fortress to protect the village and his princess.
The old woman paused again, turned her head as if to listen, then cleared her throat and continued.
But the Bloodfang god's servants came down from the mountains and slaughtered the guardian wolves and stole the village people. Undeterred, the hunter sang new songs of hope, songs that your father still knew and taught me. With those songs, he rallied more wolves and even terrible forest bears. Then he stormed the mountain strongholds with his army of faithful animals and attacked the fortress itself. He threw down the evil armies and opened deep prisons to free the would-be victims of the Bloodfang god. Together, hunter, beasts, and people of the green fields even tore down the great altar at the heart of the fortress. Then the hunter and his princess and all the people departed the dread city and descended the mountain paths back to their fields.
The Prime Widow began to cough uncontrollably and shuffled over to one of the tables to find some water. She gestured to Eztelnira to continue.
As the hunter and his princess crossed the mountains in triumph, The Bloodfang God himself appeared and made war upon them. The secret songs tell of a terrible fight, of the people scattered, but they also tell that the hunter and his princess stood their ground and brought the Old One low. As he passed into the underworld, defeated, he reached out a spirit hand and choked the princess to death, then dragged her cursed soul down to the chamber of the dead with him. Enraged because none had stayed to fight the monster, and filled with grief at the death of his beloved, the hunter took up all of his remaining magic and threw himself from the mountains with a curse. As the blood flowed from his shattered body into the ground, the first blood beasts emerged. That is why, to this day, the beasts command the guardian wolves, and together they watch the paths into the mountains, hunting down anyone who dares approach, either from the stone ways or from the green fields. If all this is true, why did the village people build the altar in the woods? Alwandor asked.
By offering the Bloodfang God sacrifices of deer and goat and forest pig, they hoped he might be satisfied and his thirst for human flesh cease,
the Prime Widow replied as she returned to stand beside them.
By the time I was a child, few worshipped the Old One, and the Owl Matron had become supreme, even driving out the memory of the Secret Woman. But when the First Fist's father's father took the Magisterium, he reclaimed the Old One as a warrior god, a god worthy of a warrior people. The ancient altar was repaired, though it remained deep in the woods. Long have we waited for a sign that the Bloodfang God was stirring the hearts of the people of the Stoneways to begin the cycle of conquest and harvest again, as Telmira said. It would seem that time has come.
We will teach you three songs which your father knew and taught me, to strengthen you should you face the creatures of the hunter,
the Prime Widow said.
It is fitting that it was your father who brought those songs to us, and that his daughter is now to be the Secret Woman's instrument. I begin to see great circles of death and rebirth, Bright Sparrow, and they turn around you.
And after I have learned the songs?
Then you will take the path as you were commanded.
This was an original work of music and text by Stan Pelkey. Please note that any unauthorized broadcasting, public performance, copying, or re-recording of this program, its story, or its music is an infringement of copyright.